Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. What makes a person able to see, and is this something that can be learned? Hi everyone, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. Today is April 19th and I'm Naomi, excited to be with you in the studio again today. We have a really interesting article that has to do with science and health and advances in technology as well. I think there's a lot to learn here, a lot to consider, some very advanced vocabulary as well, so make sure you get your pencils and your highlighters out so you can take notes as we go along. But the topic here is seeing without sight. Now let's back up a second and just talk about having vision in general. I mean, I always think about this as being such a gift and something that I often take for granted. And so I'm curious about what our other panelists think about this as well. Bill, welcome.
Hi, Naomi. Hello, listeners. Great to be here. And it is a fascinating article and great vocabulary, Naomi, and also some challenging concepts to try and understand what is going on here with this. But yeah, the gift of sight is something that we do take for granted, and we really need to be careful. One thing I would suggest to all of our listeners is that if you are doing any work, whether it's around the home or at the workplace, wear safety goggles. I actually worked in a factory for 4 years, and we had to wear goggles every minute on the job, and these were 12-hour shifts. And so there's always the danger when you're working that something can fly into your eye and actually cause blindness.
Right. Yes, and it's something a lot of people don't really think about very hard. Of course, you can't live your life in fear either. For those of us who don't work in factories, we're not telling you to get nervous about losing your sight. But I do think it's something that we have that's very valuable that we don't really think about.
I'll give you an example. People might do work like in the yard. They'll use like a weed whacker or something like that. Or you might see people here working in parks. And it's amazing how many people I see not wearing safety goggles, or maybe they're working at the motorcycle shop and they're working on equipment. There are so many instances we really just need to think for a moment that this gift could be lost permanently.
Right. Well, also with us is another person who understands about valuing the gifts that she's been given. Welcome, Amanda.
Hello, listeners. Thank you, Naomi. Yeah, I think you're right. We can take it for granted, not knowing what it's like to be without sight. I think especially as women, we can also think about that when we're using our makeup.
Yes.
You know, I think I read one time the statistics of people having accidents with mascara.
Oh, dear.
Yes. because that, too, is close to your eye. I think it can happen, as we say in English, in the blink of an eye, in a very brief moment.
Good expression.
So, yeah, it's very good to look at today's lesson and remember our sight is very valuable.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that we do day to day that constrain our eyes and make our eyes kind of tired, right? So, for instance, wearing a lot of makeup can actually, I find, irritate my eyes a little bit, and I have to be careful about that and washing my makeup off correctly. I also think about just computer use.
Yes, looking at the screen for too many, too many hours. Often, you know, people advise us to take a rest, right? Maybe every hour, rest your eyes for about 5 minutes so you don't strain your eyesight.
And certainly don't be using the computer in the dark. You know, a lot of people stay up late at night, and you always want to have lights on, other lights on, because if it's in the dark, that strains your eyes.
Right, and I've noticed that, actually, especially when I use, like, an iPod or something, and it's dark around. I notice later that my eyes are a little strained. Now, it's very nice for us to talk about this, but, of course, some people have not had sight from birth. And I know even some of our listeners are familiar with this. They've grown up being unable to see. And so they really rely on their other senses much more, don't they?
Yeah, they really do. We talk about that a little bit in this article about how people without their sight can adapt. They can use other things like their hearing and their sense of touch to compensate for that. However, this is fascinating. This research is going into the mind and affecting the people's ability to suddenly, quote, see things.
Right. It sounds impossible.
It does sound impossible, but we're seeing that with technology and also just with science, that is becoming more possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Well, I would like to get into this article and see what else we can understand about how people who have been born blind can start to learn to see.
Seeing without sight. A recent study shows that the mind's eye can learn to see, even in those who were born blind. People blind from birth can be taught to see images that are conveyed as sounds, says a new study that calls into question a long-standing belief about the limits of the human brain. Devices that scan visual images and reinterpret regularities as sounds were used to retrain the brains of congenitally blind people in a study published this week in the journal Neuron. The authors at the Safra Center for Brain Science at Hebrew University in Israel put people who had been blind since birth through 70 hours of training with a visual to auditory sensory substitution device. Initially, the subjects were able to distinguish among faces, houses, everyday objects, body shapes, and textures. Eventually, they were able to read letters and words, identify facial expressions, and locate people's positions. In one video, a blind person is shown a picture of a woman with a ponytail and identified the hairstyle.
So seeing without sight sounds very confusing. It doesn't really sound like it makes sense at all. But what exactly are we talking about here, Amanda?
Well, we're talking about the fact that rather than using their sight to see things, they're using something else.
Okay. And what are they using?
Well, they are using the mind's eye. The deck there says a recent study shows that the mind's eye can learn to see even in those who were born blind. So we're not talking about actually the stimulation, the light signals making people see, but actually they're using their brain, their imagination.
Right. So if you are using your mind's eye, this isn't necessarily just someone who isn't able to use their physical eyes. We can often say, oh, well, I see it in my mind's eye when I imagine, you know, the situation. You can kind of picture something in your brain without actually seeing it in real life. So using this, people can learn how to see. And how do we begin our article?
Well, we see that people blind from birth can be taught to see images that are conveyed as sounds. So people that are blind from the time that they were born can be taught or learn. They can learn how to see images carried through sounds.
Okay, you notice that "see" is in quotes there, like we're saying, well, of course, they're not literally seeing them. Mm. But this is a little confusing. This is a new study that's come out, and our author explains that this study is quite powerful.
Right. It says that a new study that calls into question a longstanding belief about the limits of the human brain. So first, we've got a couple of vocabulary-focused terms there. First, I'm going to cover calls into question. That means to create doubts about something. Mm-hmm. Say, hey, I'm not sure about this thing that, you know, we had before.
Right. And you can use that in a variety of ways. For instance, if I do something really irresponsible at work, then someone said, you know, her behavior really called into question her ability to manage this project, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So they're saying, now we have doubts about you. But what do we have doubts about in this case? It's actually kind of a positive thing.
A long-standing belief. And when something is long-standing, we see that it has existed for a long time. So people have believed the limits about the human brain for a long time.
Right. And so if we're calling those limits into question, that might be a very hopeful thing. And the way that they're doing that, we find out in the next paragraph, is through a certain kind of device.
Yes, devices that scan visual images and reinterpret regularities as sounds. So I'm going to stop right there. What we do here is they've got a device that will actually look at items or people or pictures, things like that, and actually turn them into sound waves, and it will take colors and shapes and turn them into sound waves. That's what's happening.
Okay. And so they send those sounds into the ears of people who are congenitally blind. Now, what does that mean?
Congenitally means that they have had a disease that has existed or been there since birth.
Okay, now this is a really important point because, of course, there's a difference between someone who has become blind and someone who was born blind.
Right. For instance, you may have, over time, lost your sight or perhaps through an accident lost your sight. But these people were actually, these things existed when they were born.
Right. So what difference does that make in your brain?
Well, we will, find out the significance of that because there are certain parts of the brain that are assigned certain functions, and there's a part that's assigned processing visual images.
Right.
And if you're born with this, that part of the brain is really never utilized or activated.
Right. So, for instance, if someone has never walked versus someone who used to walk and now hasn't been able to, there's a big difference. Mm-hmm. There's still some kind of memory. That behavior has been learned before. Mm-hmm. So if someone was able to see at one point, that's quite different from someone who was never able to see. So just to make that distinction a bit more clear before we continue, someone who has never been able to see, that's who's being focused on in this study. And so the authors of the study, who are located at the Safra Center for Brain Science at Hebrew University in Israel, what did they do for this project?
They put people who had been blind since birth through 70 hours of training, and that was with a visual to auditory sensory substitution device.
Okay, that's a bit of a mouthful. Can you explain it a little more?
Okay. This is the device that they've been using to scan the visual images that we talked about earlier. And what it does is it goes from the visual to the sound. Auditory here means anything to do with hearing things. And sensory is touch, smell, our taste, these kinds of things, and it replaces, substitutes those things for each other.
Okay, good. So the most basic example I can think of for something like this would be sometimes you come to a stoplight and they have a sound going to also let you know when the light is green, when it's red. That's a visual to auditory substitution device at a very, very basic level,
mm-hmm.
right?
Right, and that would be for blind people at an intersection. Of course, auditory, we would also use the term, familiar terms would be audio.
Mm-hmm.
So just think of that, when you're talking about, hearing things. So it's interesting that they've got this device that actually turns it into a whole different sensory signal.
Yeah, really fascinating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we'll learn a little more about that in a moment. But right away, initially, at the very beginning, the subjects, the people involved in the study, were they able to do anything with this audio information?
This is amazing. They were able to distinguish among faces, houses, everyday objects, body shapes, and textures.
Wow.
Now, take in mind, these are things that they've never seen, and yet they were able to distinguish, tell the difference between them.
Right. So I wonder if they're sort of trying to imitate the sound that would already occur in nature. Like, for example, if someone is a very tall person with a large frame, their voice would come from a different place and sound a little different from someone who's very petite and small. So I wonder how much of it is something that might have connected already with things they'd experienced. Mm. But what's really amazing is how it continues from there.
Right. Eventually, they were able to read letters and words and even identify facial expressions. And even further than that, locate where people are.
Okay. So we have one particularly incredible example that they bring up here.
That's right. We see that in one video, a blind person was shown the picture of a woman with a ponytail, and they were able to recognize that person had a ponytail, the hairstyle the woman had.
Okay. This sounds just impossible.
It does sound impossible. And now, one thing is that blind people, their auditory senses are actually stronger than ours are.
Yeah.
And because of that, they are trained that way. Their brain has actually shifted their function from seeing to their auditory ability. So they're really attuned to this. And so they're going to be more sensitive to any slight difference in any auditory signal they receive.
Right. Yeah. And I think I also just consider when I'm walking down the street, I see so many things that I think my brain gets a little overwhelmed trying to process all of it. And I sometimes wonder if I didn't have all that visual stuff coming at me, whether the information I was taking in, I would be able to sort of understand it more deeply because I would be able to focus a little more, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like having all of our senses can be a little bit much, actually.
Really?
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like when you're walking down the street, there's lights and there's signs and you're trying to look in eight directions at once. If I were only going on sounds instead of sounds and sights, sometimes I think it would be a little more peaceful. I'd be able to concentrate better.
Do you ever walk down the street with earphones in listening to music?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
And when you look around but you're hearing the music?
It's more peaceful.
It's true, especially if you're on like the subway or something.
Yeah.
And people are chatting and maybe it's loud or babies are crying, you know, and you're just listening to beautiful music.
Yeah. So I do think you're right. I mean, we all work in different ways. I mean, even people who have all of their senses, you know, full access to all of their senses, our brains still operate differently from each other. But it's interesting to see how people who are lacking one of the skills that we're all used to having, they can really make up for it in other ways that are just incredible. Mm-hmm. And so we'll learn a little bit more about that in our next reading.
Seeing through touch. Blind people have long used the capability to use another sensory perception to compensate for blindness. Braille and blind walking canes allow people without sight to read and navigate. But when the authors of the current study put subjects in a brain scanner, they gained insight into the process by which training with a sensory substitution device allowed the mind's eye to see. The human brain is a remarkably efficient and adaptable organ. When an appendage, such as a hand, is amputated, or a sensory perception, such as sight, is lost, the specialized regions of the brain in which input from the hand or the eyes is processed are reassigned to other duties.
All right, so can you see through touch? Well, we learn that blind people have long used the capability to use another sensory perception to compensate for blindness. Now, there's a lot of big words in that sentence.
There are a lot of big words. We start off by using the word capability, that they have long used the capability to use another sensory perception. Capability meaning ability or skill that you can just expand on. A capability is being able to do something. So ability with even more skill, for instance.
Sure. So if you call someone able, that just means they can do something. If they're capable, it means they put some effort into it. They do it. They do it well. You know, you can kind of trust them. So they're kind of putting a little effort in here, the capability to use another sensory perception.
Yeah, so they're able to use maybe their hearing, smell, taste, touch to compensate for blindness. And when we compensate for something, we actually are making up for a shortcoming in another area. So we're doing something to actually fill in the space that is not being taken care of.
Okay, good. Now, so for example, we come to Braille, and we see an example of Braille at the top of page 33 there. Can you explain what Braille is, Bill?
Yeah, Braille, one of our specialized terms there, is actually a system of printing for blind people so that they can read. And we see Braille on all sorts of things. There are books. You see it on ATM places, or many, many different places they can actually read. We look at letters, they can touch Braille.
Right. So that was a brilliant invention to allow people who are visually impaired to be able to still enjoy books. I think it's terrific. And of course, blind walking canes, we have a picture of that as well. If someone who is visually impaired has a walking cane, then they're able to feel their way along certain places. They can become familiar with the way a sidewalk moves and has bumps and so on. And this is another example of something where you will see in certain, for example, train stations or public places where sometimes they'll have like ridges in the floor so that someone's able to follow that.
Right, so that they can maneuver or navigate their way around.
Okay. Yeah. So, but when the authors of this study put subjects in a brain scanner, so probably one of these MRI machines of some type, what happened?
Well, they gained insight into the process by which or how they train with a sensory substitution device. And so they're able to see how the mind's eye sees things. So when we gain insight, we're learning knowledge.
Okay, so we've always known that this happens, right? We've always known that if you lose one ability, you compensate and you learn how to become stronger in your other abilities. But we didn't know how.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and we get into that there in this next paragraph because the human brain is remarkably efficient and an adaptable organ, mm-hmm. And when we say adaptable is that it can deal with changing situations. It can deal with, you know, if there's a problem in one area, the brain actually can move into another area and compensate for that problem.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it adapts, it moves, it changes, it shifts in order to, like you said, compensate and deal with the situation. So we have an example, a little bit of a different example to help us understand this better.
Right. We see that when an appendage such as a hand is amputated or a sensory perception such as sight is lost, then the body is able to learn how to adapt to that. Now, I just want to come back to the word appendage because it's not a word we often use, but it means just a smaller part of something attached to a larger part. For example, a hand is attached to our arm.
Good. So your foot is also an appendage. Sometimes we talk about this, maybe if we see a machine of some kind or some sort of system, you can say, oh, there are all these appendages sticking out. It's this idea that there are just all these little parts kind of just attached to the main area. So, of course, when this happens, your brain has to react.
Right. So when we lose one of these appendages or a sensory perception is such as sight is lost, the specialized regions of the brain in which the input from the hand or eyes is processed, well, they are reassigned to other duties. So mm-hmm. that is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That is amazing that our brain can actually figure out, with a portion of that brain can say, I'm not receiving any information. Let me go help somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm amazed by that. I mean, it makes sense with what we know about how the end result looks, right?
Yeah.
Where you see someone, for example, who's been visually impaired since birth, and then they excel at music because they're able, they have this almost like a superpower in their other senses, right?
Right. It's like you said, it's reassigned to another place. So for instance, if they lose their sight, then maybe their hearing gets better or their touch. So in, for mm-hmm. example, their musicianship just increases.
Okay. See, this is interesting. I thought we were just a bit lazy, those of us who have all of our senses. But it turns out that actually our brains are busy in more areas. Mm. That kind of makes sense, right? The power is spread out. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm just thinking about that. If, you know, it takes intellectual energy.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's, you know, there's neurons firing in your brain, if you've got all five of your senses, and for instance, your sight actually uses up a lot of your energy,
right,
Naomi, because I'm just thinking about the work that you do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're sitting at a computer 8-10 hours a day, and you're doing all sorts of things that involve sight, as far as your editing, writing,
mm-hmm.
reviewing pictures, laying out magazine articles, that is consuming a ton of energy. And it has to come from somewhere else.
Right.
So,
yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, let's learn a little more through our feature today.
What are you working on, Lisa?
A report for my life science class. We're studying congenitally blind people and some new research that has been done to help them see.
I'm confused. I thought that restoring vision in these situations was impossible.
That long-standing belief has been called into question, thanks to advances made at Hebrew University in Israel.
Did they make transplants, such as replacing the eyes?
No, auditory sensory substitution devices were used to stimulate brain activity, allowing the patients to compensate for blindness.
I know that blind people can read using Braille, and they use walking canes to navigate. Is this similar to those tools?
Very different. Visual images were converted into soundscapes. These auditory signals actually triggered activation in their visual cortex.
I see. That's the part of the brain that processes input from the eyes.
Right. For a long time, scientists didn't think it was possible to engage regions of the brain that had never been used for their intended purpose.
That's amazing. So now, people who have been blind can imagine or mentally visualize something they don't see with their eyes, but see via sound waves.
It's like that part of the brain has been awakened. With the right input, blind people can distinguish faces, houses, body shapes, all sorts of things.
I can see that you have studied this extensively. No wonder you've been working so hard.
Well, I'm interested in it since I hope to work in the rehabilitation field.
Well, good luck finishing your report. I need to go. See you next time, Lisa.
See you later, Gary.
Okay.
Lisa's vocabulary was amazing, wasn't it?
It was. They kind of gave us a little preview of what we're going to learn about tomorrow, actually. And that's a few more details about exactly how this works. We've heard sort of a little bit of a preview today, just giving us this idea that, yes, it is possible for sounds to help blind people see, but how exactly that works, we'll get to tomorrow. So I hope you'll stay tuned and join us again then. Until then, you can also spend some time on our website, can't you?
That's right. You can go to studioclassroom.com, and we also have an English corner there where you can leave notes or just any questions that they may have.
Right, and lots of other features too.
Yeah, you can make sure you check out Topic Talks, and you can actually see Gary and Lisa perform that feature with video.
Ooh.
So that's even better.
Excellent. And of course, don't forget we have discussion questions as well for each article so that you can practice writing your English or try it with a friend as well. So I hope that keeps you busy, but we'll see you tomorrow for more of this lesson.